Good morning. I wanted to discuss a topic that a number of you have asked about, which is how to learn Haggadah, the nature of Haggadah, the binding authority of Haggadah, and the like. If you take a look at the first source, the Sifrei over here says, Shelo tomar lamadati halachos daily. Talmud lomar kiyim tishmor tishmirun es kol hamitzvah hazos kol hamitzvah lamod medrash halachos vagados. That a person cannot say, should not say, I learned halacha, that's good enough. No. The pasuk says kol hamitzvah, which implies that you have to go to Friday class. If you look at, I think, almost every formulation, actually, in Chazal concerning the scope of Talmud Torah, it always emphasizes the importance of learning Haggadah along with Halacha. And there are many, many sources in Chazal, which I didn't bother putting here for today, about why learning Haggadah is so important. Many of them emphasize that Haggadah especially teaches Yir Shamayim. Many emphasize that they help facilitate a understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of Yediyas Hashem. And clearly it's something that Chazal said is very important. There's a very interesting Gemara in Bava Kamma, which I imagine the guys in the Kol Seder, so you finished Hakones? So there's a great story over there on Daf Samech Amud Beis. The Gemara says that Rav Ami and Rav Asi were sitting in front of Rav Yitzchak Nafcha. So one of them said, you know, will the Rebbe teach Halacha? And the other one said, will you teach Haggadah? So each one of the Talmidim didn't let the Rebbe go weiter. So the Rebbe said, this is like a woman who's married to an old wife and a young wife. So the old wife plucks out, or the young wife plucks out all the white hairs of her husband. The old wife plucks out all the brown hairs of her husband, and the husband ends up being bald. Meaning to say that each one of the Talmidim try to create the Rebbe or the Torah in their own image. So they preferred to a certain appearance, right? The young wife wanted her husband to look young. She didn't want to be married to a fogey, so she tried to remake her husband to accord with what she was hoping her husband would look like. And the old wife did the same. And what you end up is a husband who's bald if you do that too much. So clearly, I don't think the metaphor over here is meant to imply that Halacha and Haggadah have conflicting agendas, but certainly it does imply that sometimes there are Torah scholars who might excel in one aspect of Torah, some maybe more in Halacha, some more in Haggadah, and sometimes perhaps they'll fight over what the true message of the Torah really is. And that can sometimes lead to a incorrect understanding, or a certainly incomplete understanding of the Torah. Now, I don't think that the Gemara is telling me Halacha and Haggadah have differing agendas. Rachmana Litzlan, they're really two perspectives on the truth, on trying to understand Ratzon Hashem. The Gran Mishle in Perek Chaf Hei Pasuk Chaf Aleph compares Halacha to fire and Haggadah to water. So in one sense, you could see water and fire as clashing forces, like those two wives in the Mashal from Bava Kamma. But at the same time, we all realize that fire and water are both life-sustaining, that we couldn't really live without both fire and water. And we have to figure out how to utilize both forces and find the appropriate balance so as to be able to function and live and thrive. And that's really what Rav Yitzchak Nafcha does. He teaches a teaching that really integrates both halacha and agada. And, of course, we know kulan nitnu meroa echad. So we have to make sure that we study both and we understand both and we appreciate that both are Ratzon Hashem. Now, a very important question that many people wonder about is whether agada is binding or binding in the same way that halacha is binding. There's a Yerushalmi, the second source over here, that seems to address this question. Reb Zeira b'shem Shmuel ein lemeidin lo min halachos v'lo min hagados v'lo min hatosafos ela min hatalmud. So what does ein lemeidin min halachos mean? There's actually a machlokas. According to the Gra, it means we don't derive from the principles of halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, which are sometimes different. According to other mefarshim, it means that when the Mishnah states halacha kedivrei ploni, that's not necessarily always the halacha. So that's ein lemeidin min halachos. We'll guess skip to the third one. It's also a little simpler. Min hatosafos presumably is referring to tosefta, and what it's telling us is that we don't paskin from tosefta. That's not to say that tosefta doesn't play a role in figuring out halacha, but certainly when it's against the Gemara, so we will paskin like the Gemara, not from Tosefta. What about the middle statement, though? What's meant when it says ein lemeidin min ha'agados? So here there are a number of interpretations, but I think we can divide them up into two schools of thought. The first school of thought assumes that agada is binding, and this Yerushalmi is not meant to indicate that agada isn't binding. So what does the Yerushalmi mean? So within this first school of thought, there are various theories. Some, like the Noda Behuda, which you have over here, tell us that it means that we don't derive halachic rulings from agada. In other words, of course, agada is binding. But ein lemeidin means that we don't learn halacha l'maisa. If you're looking to figure out halacha l'maisa, so you don't look at agadita. And the reason for that is because that's not the goal. If you take a look at this Noda Behuda, at the very end of the citation, he writes, aval midrashim v'agados ikar kavanasan al hamusar v'al haramazim v'al hamishalim shebahem v'akol ikar adas. In other words, agada is extremely important. It's ikar adas. It just means that you don't use agada to figure out halach lemaisa, because that's not the goal. That's not the purpose of agada. It's to teach you mishalim. It's to teach you musar. Aval ein ikar kavanasan al piskei halachos. Lachein ein lemeidin mehem lepsak halacha. That's one pshat. He says that's the pshat of the Taisus Yantif as well. Others take a little less broadly. If you look at the Pri Chadash, which is quoted here below in the Tshuva from Rav Avadia, as well as a number of other achronim he cites, they say, no, maybe you can actually learn halacha from agadita. It just means that in the event that it's soser, other sources, then we would prefer other sources. In other words, if there's a stira or a machlokas between a halachic source and an agadic source, so then we paskin from the halachic source. The truth is, these two avanos both have antecedents in the Rishonim. Taisvis, certainly in a number of places, seems to follow the second school of thought and does paskin halachos from many agados. The Rashba, in a number of places, seems to take the first school of thought, and he critiques Tosos. One example is the Rashba in Megillah Tesvav Amud Aleph, who quotes Taisvis, who learn a certain halacha from an agada, and the Rashba says, no, you know, we don't learn from agada. The Rashba says, divrei agada hein, vein meshivin aleha, So this seems to be a machlokes Rishonim, a machlokes Achronim. But again, both views in this first school of thought take for granted that Agada is binding. It's just a shaila whether you could learn halacha from it. Now, when we say that Agada is authoritative, that does have a different connotation than when we say that halacha is authoritative. And we'll develop these ideas a little later, but just to briefly present them. First of all, when it comes to Agadic texts, often there's no explicit ramifications that emerge. Meaning to say, as opposed to halacha, where usually it will teach you this particular act is mutter, this particular act is aser, Agadic texts oftentimes present values, but don't necessarily present clear-cut rulings the way halacha does. Oftentimes, Agadic texts, even more than halachic texts, lend themselves to multiple interpretation. Oftentimes, they disagree with each other. There are more sources up front if you're looking. They present machlokas, but again, the idea is that you can't simply claim that they're not true. You can't simply claim about a medrash or an agada or the like, you know, this isn't binding. Oftentimes, and again, we'll see this later, the Maharal writes, you can't disprove a particular position from an agada because the other view can perhaps read it in a different way that doesn't necessarily present a pircha on their perspective. But fundamentally, they're no less authoritative than halacha. Now, we should note, however, that even within this school of thought, I believe that you have to sometimes divide between different types of agada. Sometimes agada is giving advice, which is not necessarily meant normatively. If Chazal are giving advice about how to shop, so it may be the case that advice isn't relevant in today's marketplace. It doesn't necessarily, again, mean it's not authoritative. It's a little more tricky when it gets to matters that are... I'll give you an example. I remember, Chazal say, the Medrash says, Ishak Sheira Osa Ritzon Baila. It's a Tana de Be'eliyahu. Quoted by the Rama in Shulchan Aruch, Ibn Ezra, Siman Yud. Along similar lines, the Rambam in the Perek Tesvav of Hilchos Ishus writes about how a tzivu chachamim, that a wife should basically listen to what her husband says. The question is, when you have something like that, should that be seen as advice? Or should that be seen as a timeless Torah value which must be followed? And different thinkers take different approaches. There are a lot of Sfarim that definitely see that as something that's unchanging and always true. I think if you look, Rav Lichtenstein has an article entitled Of Marriage, Relationships and Relations, and he argues that perhaps a different model would be appropriate nowadays. In other words, he's seeing that statement in Chazal more in the realm of advice, and therefore perhaps subject to different, contextualization based off of context. So sometimes it's not clear whether a particular statement in Chazal was meant as advice or meant as a timeless value that isn't subject to change. That's all within the first school of thought. The second school of thought, which we'll see, maybe doesn't exist at all. That's going to be subject to a machlokas. But the second school of thought, let's say, the at least superficial and simple reading of a number of statements, especially in the Gaonim, seem to understand this Yerushalmi as indicating that Agada is less binding than Halacha. So if you take a look over here at the statement from Rav Haigon, 60% of the way down the first page, Hav Yodim ki Divrei Agada lav kishmuahem. Divrei Agada are not like Shmua, meaning to say they're not based off of tradition. Ella kol echad doresh mashaala alibo. Everybody says their own vart, whatever they think makes sense. Kigon efshar v'yeshlomar. In other words, these are statements that are meant as possibilities, but not necessarily definitive. Lo davar chatuch. We talked about the chatuch from the Yerushalmi a couple weeks ago. Lefikach, says Rav Haigon, ein somchin alehen. We don't rely on them. We're going to try to explain this. But yes.
How is this shit to explain why they recorded the Gemara at all?
Well, they're very valuable. Nobody would deny that they're extremely valuable. But they're, in terms of their authoritativeness, they're qualitatively different than halacha. Ein somchin alehen.
In what sense?
Not true. These are the conjecture of great Torah scholars who were tremendously knowledgeable in Torah and their Havana of Torah and Yerushalayim and the like. But they're still not binding. In other words, when it comes to halacha, so let's say I think that I have a great raya that the Gemara is wrong. So it doesn't really matter. As smart as I think I am and as good as my argument is, that's irrelevant because the Gemara, maybe we'll talk about in a couple minutes why, but the Gemara is binding. And what these Gaonim are saying is Agadita isn't the same way. Agadita is wisdom. It's something that we should take very seriously. It's extremely valuable, but it's not authoritative. In other words, you could say, well, we don't accept this. Now, in halacha, you can't say that. I mean, you could try to show it's a machlokas, and we pass on like the other view or the like, but you can't simply say, that's the view of the Gemara, but that's not what we do, right? And what the Gaonim are saying is that our attitude, our approach to Agada is different. Again, that's not to say it's not a reflection of great wisdom. It's, the same Chachamim that said the halachic statement said the Agadic statements. And we take them extremely seriously, but just not in the same way. Well, let's see a little bit more what they said. Rashri Ragon, Hani Mili Dinafki Mipsuki Umik. Umikri, Medrash, Vagada. There's these derivations that come from Sukkim that are called Medrash and Agada. Umdina ninhu. They're Umdina. What does Umdina mean? So the truth is, we'll see later, it's going to be a machlokas between the Maral and Rabbi Azariah de Rossi. But at least de Rossi assumed that Umdina means it's conjecture and therefore less binding. Lachain ein somchin al Agada. V'amru ein lemeidin min Agados. The Yerushalmi we just saw, in other words, the way he's understanding Yerushalmi is that it means it's umduna. V'nachon mehem ma shem mischazek min ha-seichel min ha-mikra nekabel mehem v'ein sofit tichla la-Agados. In other words, again, we'll accept it when it makes sense. Rav Shmuel HaNagid, this might actually be Rosh Yergon, according to some scholars. But either way, the Agada who called Pirush Shiyavo B'Talmud al Shum Inyan Shelo Yia Mitzvah. Zui Agada. Ve'en l'chalomod mimena elamash yal alada. So accept the things that make sense, but not necessarily the things that don't. Ve'esh l'chaladas shekoma shekimu chazal alacha b'inyan mitzvah shime pimoshe rabbeinu alav ashalom shekibel mipi agvura en l'chalosef alav lo l'gro mimenu. The Gaonim over here emphasize that the reason for the distinction between halacha and agada is because halacha is mipi agvurat, mipi Moshe Rabbeinu, there's a mesora directly for it, whereas Agada is not. There is no such direct mesora. Now, this might also relate to the Gaonic view about the nature of the transmission of halacha, in which nothing was ever forgotten. It's a little more complicated than that. But basically, everything was transmitted, and so halacha has a much it's binding because of that mesora. Aval mashir pirshu b'psukim kol echad kafi mashin is damin lo umash rabbeinu. When you look at a medrash, and there are sorts of different interpretations of the psukim, these are the things that the chachamim thought made sense. Ulfi mashial al adas mina perushim ha'elo lomdim osam dashar ein samchan aleihem. So again, here you have a number of statements that basically tell us that we accept what's reasonable from Haggadah, but they're certainly not as authoritative as halachic texts. Perhaps one more contemporary thinker that expresses this view, and we should note, by the way, there are some gaonim, though not necessarily the ones I cited here, who are machalic between Agada that's quoted in Gemara versus Agada not quoted in Gemara that might be somewhat less authoritative. So I'll just read you one more contemporary source. This is from, I didn't put on your sheets, it's from Rav Hirsch from Chorev. He writes, "There will accordingly be two schools of study engaged in the exposition of the divine law, differing only in the sources from which they draw their knowledge of it. One school of thought will concern itself with the comprehension of the utterances regulating our practical conduct in and for themselves, and of the lessons equally concerned with practice which can be derived from those utterances. And its knowledge will be derived almost exclusively from tradition, which transmits the oral and written divine utterances and regulations of the sages. The other school will concern itself with reflecting and pondering on those laws, and its source of knowledge will be the more or less illuminating power of insight which dwells in each individual religious thinker. The work of the first school lies before us in the Shemitah, made up of things that are heard, like Shema. The work of the second school is Agadita, made up of ideas which have occurred to each one, of which," right, he learns it from the word Higid, they passed it on. "Everything belonging to the first school is obligatory because it emanates from the authority which has power to bind. All that springs from the second school has no power to bind because it presents only the views of individuals and can claim recognition only insofar as it is in conformity with what is contained in the work of the first school." And he goes on, essentially, a presentation of all those views that we saw in the Gaonim. Now, not everybody understands these statements of the Gaonim as differing with the first school of thought. The Maharal, as we'll see maybe shortly, argues that he goes through these statements of the Gaonim and argues that these Gaonim aren't actually denying the authority of Chazal. And we'll see what he says in a moment, but we'll say the simple reading of these statements does indicate what we've been saying. Among Rishonim, by the way, the matter, I think, is also debated. Rashi, for example, in a number of places, will say something like, "Vim agada hi hare tov, vim lav," so then I have a lot of kashas on it. Let's say about statements from Rav Moshe Darshan. And the way that seems to be saying, this way the Sifsei Chaim says it, Sifsei Chachamim, is Kilomer im Rabbi Moshe Darshan matza tam ze b'sefer agada hare tov, ve'eni rishai lachlok alav. Right? If Rav Moshe Darshan got that from Chazal, then I might have questions, but I can't disagree. Vimlav, Omer Ani, but if not, so then I have kashas and I'm going to reject it and give a different shot. In other words, Rashi seems to be accepting the first school of thought. An interpretation of Chazal can't be rejected. The position of the Rambam and the Ramban here are very complex. Because they're complex, I'm going to skip them today. I don't actually think they fall into either of the schools of thought. But we'll leave that. Ramban's position also relates to his famous statements in the debate, which has a question in its own right. To what degree was he saying what he really believed in, and to what degree was he just saying statements to get out of trouble? So we'll leave them out. Other number of statements in Kuzari that maybe sound more like the Gaonim, though he speaks a little more reverentially. But he writes, I'll just read you one line, of the Loach Achad Mimcha Melech Kuzar. Again, I didn't give this to you on your sheets. Ki yesh b'talmud ma'amarim she'eni yachol leva'aram lecha bi'ur maspik. Ve'af lo uchal laharotcha be'eza kasher hein omdim im ha'inyan she'hem danim bo. Ma'amarim eile huchnesu ala talmud al yedei ha'talmidim asher yishtadlu lishmor al haklal she'aya bi'adam afilu sichas chachamim tzriche talmud. U'me'od ha'yu nizharim lo lomar davar shelo shamu mirabosam vishtadlu lomar kol ma sheshamu mirabosam u ma sheshamu mirabosam zihirim hayu l'amrau bilshonam mamash afilu lo hivinu mashma'o vaz hayu omrim kach shamanu v'kibalnu. He continues and he says al nasim eifo lev l'mamarim eile v'chiburenu ha-talmid lo yigara me'arko. In other words, don't ask me kashas from Agada, right? And the fact that, you know, what I'm saying is not necessarily consistent is not a problem. So we have a machlokas here, seemingly. Now, the question is, why distinguish? Why distinguish between halacha and agada? In other words, like we said, they're both the same people. They're coming from the same sources. It's the same Talmud Bavli. It's the same Tanayim and Amoraim. So one reason is what we saw in the Gaonim, which is that the teachings of halacha are from Sinai, and the teachings of agada are made up by Chazal, and therefore are somewhat less binding. This isn't so pashut just because, I think as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, even within halachic rulings, many Rishonim reject the Gaonic view that everything and every detail was given to Moshe Mesinai. The Rambam, for example, writes that many of the teachings of Chazal and Halacha weren't necessarily directly taught Mesinai. Anything about which there's a machlokas, there wasn't a Mesorah and there was never a Mesorah. So that distinction works for the Gaonim, but is perhaps less pashut for other Rishonim. I think a more fundamental reason emerges from the Rambam, and really we have to appreciate why it is that halacha is binding. In other words, if you just take a look, we'll just tell you outside more. Notice, why is it that that we have to follow halacha? And why can't we argue with Talmud Bavli? Right? Again, especially if we have a lot of rayos. So this is a bigger question, and we're certainly not going to address it comprehensively now, but I think the most basic answer is formulated by the Rambam in his Hakdama to Mishneh Torah, and he writes very briefly, Ki advarim shebetalmud habavli chayavim kol beis Yisrael laleches bahem v'kofin kol ir v'ir v'chol medino medina l'naheg b'chol haminhagos shenagu chachamim shebetalmud v'ligzer k'zeirosam v'laleches b'takanosam ha'uil v'chol osan advarim shebetalmud hiskimu aleim kol Yisrael. The Rambam writes that the authority of the Talmud comes from the fact that Klal Yisrael accepted it. The Rambam writes that the Talmud Bavli was the last document to be universally accepted by Klal Yisrael. After the completion of the Talmud Bavli, there was a lot of persecution, and communities separated, and they formed new communities in new places. There was no central authority as there was originally. Many understand this Rambam to be saying that the authority of the Sanhedrin HaGadol Shebi Yishalayim, which certainly is binding, that's explicit in the Pasuk, L'Sosim Nadar She'agidu L'Chayiminu Smol, comes from the acceptance of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, whenever you have something that was accepted by Klal Yisrael, it has that same binding authority as something, as a ruling that was issued by the Sanhedrin HaGadol. The Talmud Bavli was the last such thing. So therefore, when it comes to Rishonim, maybe the Psukim of the Rishonim were accepted by particular communities, and maybe countries and large parts of Klal Yisrael. But for the most part, there's not been anything since the Talmud Bavli that's been universally accepted, and therefore universally binding. Now, the question is whether that same concept is even possible when it comes to Haggadah. Maybe when it comes to Haggadah, and again, I'd like to get back to this in just a couple minutes when we talk about Psak in matters of Haggadah, but maybe when it comes to Haggadah, there is no such thing as a binding statement, and certainly a binding statement rooted in universal acceptance. Did the Sanhedrin HaGadol, for example, issue rulings in matters of Haggadah and non-halachic matters? That might actually be a machlokas between the Bavli and Yerushalmi. We'll see shortly. But the pashtus is that they didn't. There's no such concept as a binding, non-halachic ruling. And that being the case, so that might be why, a second reason, why we treat Haggadah differently than we treat halacha. Now, going back to the first statement, the Gaonic statement that Haggadic statements don't come from Moshe, this too might somewhat be subject to machlokas. There are some sources that indicate that even Haggadic statements are all from Moshe Rabbeinu. Over here you have two statements from the Menoras HaMaor, the Kriyan Haggados, Vakol Nitan BeKabbalah, Kol Ma She'amru BeMidrashos VeHaggados, Chayavin Anu LaHamin Bo Kimo. I'm reading from towards the top of page 2, sorry. Kimo b'taras Moshe Rabbeinu Alav Hashalom v'nimtza bo davar shira lanu shu derech guzma o chutz min hateva yesh lanu litlos b'chisaron hasagas da'atenu aval lo b'ma'amaram v'amalag al shum davar mima sh'amru zal ne'anash. There are other sources that say that. The Rambam writes something interesting, actually, which is that there are statements in Chazal that come from in non-halachic matters that we do have a Masorah about, and there are statements that don't. For example, about certain teachings, the Gemara uses the term Gmiri, that Avram was 52 years old when he began converting the people of Haran. We talked about last week Einam in a Minyan. Right, so that the Gemara Megillah writes, "Davar ze mesoires biadenu meavosenu makom aron enu min amida." So perhaps some statements in Chazal do have a mesora. The Rambam writes over here, you have from Hilchos Malachim the bottom top of page 2. The Rambam over here is talking about the nature of Yemos HaMashiach, and he writes, "V'chol elu advar mukiyotze bahem lo yada adam echiu adjiu." What's going to be in terms of the details of the coming of Mashiach and the like, what's the world going to look like? We don't actually know. We'll find out when it happens. Shedvarim stumen hein etzel ha-Nevi'im. And that's why the Rambam writes, you'll see that in the Nevi'im you have different impressions. Gam ha-Chachamim ein lem kabbalah b'dvarim elu. Chazal don't have a kabbalah about what's going to be exactly Bimos HaMashiach. Ela lefi achrei ha-psukim, they looked at the psukim, they tried to understand. Ulefi kach yesh lehem machlokas bedvar melu. That's why you find machlokas in Chazal about the nature of the Messianic era. I think the Rambam here is saying actually the same thing that he says with respect to halacha, which is when you find matters about which there's debate, that indicates a lack of mesorah. So the Rambam writes, the fact that you see so many differing opinions with respect to Yemos HaMashiach and Chazal is an indication that clearly there is no mesorah. Now, I want to say something that I think is very important about all this before we go on to the Maharal, which is that what is the purpose of Agada? So I think at the beginning we mentioned some Mamari of Chazal to increase your Shemayim, to help us understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be inspiring. That's true. But we have to add a couple of things. I think that people make a terrible mistake when they see Torah purely in halachic terms. Torah is about halacha. It's a legal document telling you the laws. And that's not true. Torah includes values, hashkafos, as well as halachos. And the primary way in which those values, those hashkafos, were transmitted is through Agada. And on a fundamental level, Torah values, as transmitted through Agada, are just as binding as those transmitted through Halacha. And I believe that even the Gaonim agree to that. And I'll explain in a moment. The Rav, for example, talks about the difference between Bris Sinai and Bris Avos. He notes that Chazal refer to two types of brisim. And he says, what's the difference? Bris Sinai, or Bris Avos, expresses attitudes, ideals, and sentiments. It guides our feelings and consciousness. It is the backdrop of Bris Sinai. Bris Sinai is the behavioral fulfillment of the truths, values, and Jewish self-awareness expressed by Bris Avos. So, Bris Avos is in a sense even more foundational than Bris Sinai. Bris Sinai is the halacha. Bris Avos is the foundation. It's these values, ideals, attitudes, sentiments about which all of Torah is binding. If you look at the statements from those Gaonim, or Shira Gaon, or Hai Gaon, and you look actually what they're talking about the interpretations in the Medrash of Psukim, the opinions in the Midrashim about who the Mekoshesh was, right? I think that's what Rav Haigon's talking about. So, commenting on the view that the Mekoshesh was Tzlafchad, that's where Rav Haigon says, you know, that statement doesn't have a Mesorah for it, and it's Umdana, and you could accept it if you like, and if you don't think it makes sense, so you don't have to accept it. It wasn't talking about the basic foundational values upon which all the Torah rests that are transmitted through Agada and Chazal. I don't know of any statement in the Gaonim which undermines the centrality of those types of values. It's about specific taiches in the psukim, how you darshan certain psukim. And the Gaonim were responding to midrashim that sometimes are very fanciful and sometimes not so, you know, very distant from pshat. And while many Rishonim said, okay, that doesn't mean they're any less correct, it's just not pshat, it's drash, and we should look for the deeper meaning. That's certainly the view, I think, of most Rishonim. We should try to understand these Divrei Agada as very deep, profound ideas. Yeah, they're not pshat, but they're deep and profound. And maybe the Gaonim didn't accept that. The Gaonim said, no, you know, you don't have to accept that. Fine. But they were talking about these, again, these pshatim and the psukim and the like, who the Mekoshesh was. But they're not talking about the basic ideas in terms of values. The Rav Avadim Mibar Tanura writes at the Hakdama to Pirkei Avos, he says, why is it that Pirkei Avos begins with Moshe Kibal Tar Misina and with Sarali Yoshua Yishuah Zakenu, etc.? Why wait till Avos to tell us the Shalshalas HaMasorah, right? If I was Rav Yudah Nasi, so where would I have put that? The beginning of Brachos, right? We're already, you know, through four Siddurim of Mishnayos before we get to the Shalshalas HaMasorah. And he says the answer is because it's Pashut that, you know, when you learn Brachos or Demai or Peah or even, you know, Nashim, and it's Pashut that these things come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there's no need to make, to emphasize the Mesorah, the Mishnayos and Rosh Hashanah are from Moshe Misina, it's Pashut. But when it comes to Maseches Avos, which is largely about ethics and values and the like, so you might think, okay, so this is like, you know, everybody said whatever they thought, but there's no Mesorah for that. And therefore, Davka Rabbi Yudah Nasi waited till Avos to write that Shalshalas HaMesorah, to emphasize that even these ideas have a Mesorah. This is an idea that the Rav writes very frequently. I'll read you one statement that reflects this. Mesorah encompasses not only the analytic novella, abstract theories, halachic formulae, and logical concepts, but also ontological patterns, emotions, and reactions, a certain existential rhythm and experiential continuity. Complete transmission of the Mesorah is only possible by means of intimate connection with the previous generation, and that means both physical people and also, as he develops over there, the teachings of Chazal. Elsewhere he writes about halacha and the Mesorah, including Deos, and really being a two-tiered system. So now I'd like to turn to the Maral. The Maral is someone who really opened up Agada in a way that perhaps no thinker did before him. There's so many Agados in Chazal, and you read them, you read the Gemara, and like you have no clue what this is really teaching me and how this is supposed to impact my life, and sometimes they seem very far-fetched or having details that don't seem to be perfect, particularly illuminating. And then you read Maral, and it's so, he shows how every single detail in the Agada is meaningful. Again, Maral certainly not the only thinker in to expound upon Agada. You know, Marsha is very famous as well, and there are many, many thinkers before and after. On the Maral, though, his greatest contribution is certainly opening up Agada and helping us really relate to it and understand it. In his work, the Ber HaGola, which is different than all his other works to some degree, it's a defense, more or less, of Chazal. He raises all these questions that contemporary thinkers had against Chazal, and addresses them. He deals with, for example, extensively issues of science and contradictions between Torah and science and the like. There's a lot there, very much worth reading. But one of the things that he does over there is really a very harshly critique a fellow named Rabbi Azariah de Rossi. He lived from 1514 to 1578. In Hebrew, he's known as Azariah min HaAdumim. And he's best known for his work, the Me'orei Nayim, and specifically the Imri Bina, which is a section of the Mori Nayim, in which he uses critical methods to assess Agadic texts. And he rejects many of the traditional assumptions concerning Jewish history. He compares historical texts in the Talmud to other classical historical texts. He generally accepts the facts as presented in the non-Jewish sources over those in the Talmud. He even quotes church fathers. He questioned the authenticity of Yosefun, saying that Yosefun wasn't written by Josephus, it was a medieval work. And other things, he questioned the Jewish calendar in terms of the count of years. He says that was relatively recent. It wasn't used by the Gemara, the Gaonim. Anyway, when in 1574 Mori Nayim was completed, it caused quite a stir. The rabbis of Venice issued a cherem against reading the book without special permission from the Rabbanim of that city. There were many later bans. As we'll see in a moment, the Maharal strongly critiques the work. We should note that there are numerous traditional sources that do quote Maori Nayim. The Tosis Yantif quotes him, Mincha Shai, Chavos Yair, the Nitziv and Hemek Davar quotes him. I don't know if these citations imply endorsement to all his views. I don't think they do, but it does indicate at least some degree of respect for his scholarship. Anyhow, Rabbi Zarya quotes these statements of the Gaonim that we saw earlier, and he uses them to justify his rejection of Agada. So how does the Maharal respond? So take a look over here at the middle of the second page. Ki agon ba lomar, shal yomar ki kasher darshu davar min amikra, vehem be'emes rechokim min lashon amikra, velze amar ki hem umdina. Rotsa lomar, hasvara mechayev ze, rak shesamchu ha'inyin ala kasav, vimlo haya das vasvara mechayev osam, lawayu darshim osam min amikra. This is a very interesting insight here. He's saying that the ideas of Chazal are true because they're true. What's umdina? What's umdina is their connection to the psukim. In other words, it's sort of like if you learn a lot of Chassidish Torah, it oftentimes seems this way. When you read Chassidish Torahs, so they say a vart, and then they show how the pasuk is referring to this idea. So if you don't have an appreciation of what they're doing, so you say, like, that's what the pasuk means, that's crazy. That's not at all what the pasuk means. But if you appreciate that, I think usually, or oftentimes what's happening is here, is there's an idea that's true. It's true in its own right. It's true because it's true, however they know it. And the pasuk is a hook. It could be a way, an expression of this idea. It's not really the pshat that the idea emerged from the psukim. It's not the idea that the Rebbe read the psukim and he said, "Ah, this teaches me this idea, which I never would have known or thought of otherwise." I think more often than not, it's the opposite. The idea is true. It's an idea that they know from many places, whether it's Mesorah or from the broad message of the Torah and the like, and then they make a interpretation of the psukim that reflects this idea. And that's what the Maharal is saying, what the Gaonim meant to say. In other words, it's something that is true, that they made up that's true. The connection to the psukim is not really the basis for the idea. And that's what the Gaonim were saying. In a sense, it's similar to when we talk about an asmachta in halacha. So when we talk about asmachtos for dinim de rabbanon, for example, It's not the pshat that that's the makor, but you could read the psukim in a way that's alludes to the idea, the takana de rabbanan or the like. The psukim aren't the source. Perhaps they're a reflection, an allusion, a hook, a hint, but not the makor. And the truth is that even when it comes to halachic matters, oftentimes the makor is not misora, which is what the Gaonim are saying about the ideas in Agadita. We learn halachos from svara. The Gemara asks in three different places, lama likra svarahu? So the source for the ideas is oftentimes svara, like the Gaonim say. The fact that it's svara doesn't necessarily mean it's less authoritative in its own right. And moreover, the hooks to the psukim are not necessarily binding. Now, Rav Azariah de Rossi then quotes a statement from Rav Nissim Gaon, who writes, Hamil sagadatahi uvechol de dam yalei amu rabbanan ein somchen al divrei agada. So what does that mean? The Maral suggests that this means something which is also very important, which is that we don't rely on Agada because of what? We don't rely on Agada because the truth is that you can't oftentimes definitively prove things from Agadic statements because they could be interpreted in many ways. And a lot of times you'll have stray midrashim that on their own seem to present a certain idea which might be at odds with the overall message of the Torah and the like. And therefore, if somebody goes ahead and they present a whole philosophy and they say, and you know, this philosophy is the Torah's philosophy, and they show a medrash that seems to reflect this particular philosophy. So the Maral says you can't necessarily build a philosophy off of a medrash or a statement of Chazal or the like, because there's debate, there are different ways that that could be understood, and you can't necessarily always understand it at face value. Perhaps it has a deeper intention, perhaps it's a machlokas. The Maral writes over here, V'zeu ba'atzmo ma she'amru ein meshivin ba'agada. Ki efshar ha'omer osa amru al derech ne'alam. Perhaps that statement was stated al derech ne'alam. It was, had some type of hidden meaning. U'lefikach ein meshivin ve'ein makshin ba'agada l'pshut. You can't, when the Gaonim said ein meshivin, what they meant is you can't ask a kasha based off of the literal or simple understanding. And that's a very important point, because Maral obviously draws his whole philosophy from Chazal. But when you look at Maral's, generally speaking, he won't prove, cite, you know, one medrash and then like build a yesod off of it, and that's his philosophy. He'll usually cite like 36 different midrashim, all of which reflect his idea. And maybe, you know, some of them you'll say, I don't know if that Rai is Mukhrach or that. But overall, it's a very powerful presentation because it's reinforced by so many different sources. And that's what the Maral is saying that the Gaonim meant. And that is different than the way we deal with halacha, because halacha is presented in a much more clear-cut and concrete way. If I have a theory in halacha and you show me a gemara that's against me, I have to answer your question, right? Sometimes I might have an answer, sometimes I might not. My conclusion might be tzarchion, you know, I have so much evidence that my theory is correct, I don't know how to answer that question, but at least I have to respond to some degree. And if it's against me, then that can serve as a refutation of my whole theory. Whereas, ein meshivin men agados, the same thing isn't true with agada. Because statements are so much less definitive and the like. And I think this is an important point because, again, in many of the contemporary debates, and it's not new, the Maharal was talking about the same thing, but since we live in a contemporary world, you'll see people that arguing for all sorts of different things on, you know, every side of every question, quoting statements of Chazal that seem to support their viewpoint. And what the Maharal is saying is that when we say Ein Mashiv Ein Minhag Gadol, that's exactly what we're saying. You can't build a whole philosophy off of one medrash or one agada or the like, which might be subject to many different meanings and interpretations. And oftentimes, when people do this, it's really the opposite. They have their philosophy, and then they find midrashim that support their view. Their view might be correct, but ain meshivin. The Maharal then also says, you see over here, that you know his ikar condemnation against Rabbi Azariah de Rossi is really about his attitude towards Chazal. And that's what's so problematic. Aval shelo yu agados divrei Torah kemo shar Torah shenamra mesinai haomer kach ein lo chelek liolam haba. If you say that agada is secondary, is not important, it's not valuable, it's second class to other parts of Torah, so haomer kach ein lo chelek liolam haba. Your malig al divrei chachamim. V'zemuchach mikol asher hevi hu l'raya shal yidei ha'agados makir baro shem divrei chachma elokis l'mi shemeven es divreihem. So even though we do treat agadic statements differently than we treat halachic statements, but that doesn't mean that they're secondary, that they're unimportant, that all there is or our whole mesorah is with respect to halacha, and there's no mesorah, you don't really have to pay any attention to anything else. No, like we said earlier, agada is the primary means of transmitting Torah values. Torah values are just as important as Torah halachos, and we must seek to understand Ratzon Hashem not just in the realm of halacha, but in all the ways in which we live our life. Now, one of the things that Maharal frequently says, and not just Maharal, the Rambam, many others, is, though we've only seen it in Maharal so far today, is that agados are meant to convey a deeper hidden meaning. In other words, don't understand them kipshutam, but look for the deeper meaning. So an important question to ask is then, why are they written so cryptically? In other words, why, I wouldn't say halacha is always clear-cut either, but it's certainly much more clear-cut than agada. So if it is the case that agada is so important, so no. So like, say it more beferish, right? Why is it that the message of so many agados is really a deeper interpretation? So the Ramchal, among others, addresses this question. It's in the middle of the page 3 you have over here. This is from his Maimer on Haggados. It's printed in the back of many printings in Mesil Shisharim. And we're almost out of time, so I'll make it very brief. But basically, he says that when Reb Yudah Nasi wrote down Mishnah, when he wrote down Halacha, so that too was actually a concession. It's certainly not ideal. It was a necessary concession, as the Rambam explains, that had he not written it down, there was a fear, a danger that Torah would be forgotten, Eis Lasos Lashem, and therefore it became necessary to write down halacha to some degree, and that was added to in the Gemara and so on. Whereas there was that same concern when it came to the Torah's secrets. However, when it comes to the secrets of the Torah, the solution wasn't as straightforward, because it would be wrong to simply write down these secrets as the halacha was written down. And he writes two reasons for this. Number one is that it would be dishonorable to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to reveal his secrets to those with bad character traits, even if they're wise. And number two is because the secrets are so deep they would be misunderstood by those who are untrained. And certainly in the matter of sod, where there's an isser to be megala sod. So therefore, Chazal were torn. On the one hand, they had to write these things down, lest they be forgotten. But on the other hand, if they wrote them down explicitly, so that too would have been catastrophic and inappropriate. So their solution was to write these ideas down in a way that could be understood by those that are appropriate, but not by those that are inappropriate. So they use riddles and other methods of transmission that hid the content. Now, obviously, some agados are much more cryptic than others. Let's say the agados at the beginning of the sixth parak of Bava Basra. So almost certainly, though it's not all thinkers accept this, but I think the vast majority of commentators understand that, you know, these are obviously mashalim, right? For deeper things, you look at the various commentaries, the Gra or the Maharsha, the like, and they tell you there are other cases where agados are more straightforward, and even in some of them where Rishonim and Achronim say maybe that these are exaggerations to capture the excitement of the Talmidim or wake them up if they're falling asleep or the like. Nobody would do that this year, so I don't have to resort to such tactics. But sometimes they were. Maybe, we're out of time. So maybe next week, I'd like to continue this conversation a little more, specifically talk about halacha in Agada, and maybe go back to a topic a little bit from the beginning of the year, how it relates to it in terms of psak and Agada with relation to Ikari Amuna and the like. So Bezrat Hashem, we'll pick up next week.